4.
Once again, welcome to America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, Tosha Tosha, and Brandon in between. You always know that we're talking about the buzz out of D.C. right from the get-go. Victoria Jones from Talk Radio News joins us. And, Victoria, apparently the buzz is that there is no buzz because nobody will talk. The White House will even confirm a meeting that supposedly happened between the president and the Speaker of the House, Boehner. So what's going on there?
It's really very weird. I was at the gaggle this morning, the off-camera briefing at the White House, which started half an hour late. And there were a lot of questions from a lot of reporters about this. And Jake Carney, the press secretary, kept saying, oh, no, I know you want to know the TikTok, and I know I've been on your side, and I know how important this is to you. But I can guarantee you that no American outside of Washington, D.C. cares. And if you can find one, I'll buy you lunch at a restaurant of your choice. And I won't read out. I'm not going to read out every meeting the president may or may not have had, or confirm or deny every meeting he's reported to have had over the weekend. And then we're looking around like, what's the deal here? Everybody knows he had a meeting with Boehner on Sunday.
Yeah, strange. I don't get it.
It's very strange,
yeah.
Because this isn't the first time that they've met. They met in late June, the day before Cantor pulled out of the talks. They met on Sunday, and of course they had golf.
Yes, so that's not a secret. Yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those were the shots heard around the world, absolutely. Well, we'll see. I'm sure in the next couple of days some more will trickle out about that, and eventually probably the president will say something, or at least his mouthpiece will, and I'm sure that Boehner somehow eventually will say something about it, and I guess we'll know more.
I think so. And, of course, we've got the talks tomorrow at the White House of congressional leaders with the president and the vice president. So we'll see if those go anywhere or if they start to make some progress. And they might in incremental steps, because Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, said today something very interesting when he said, if the president wants to talk loopholes, we'll be glad to talk loopholes. Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's see what those loopholes are for sure. It's interesting. The president's pretty busy because also he was defending his economic record, apparently, in his first Twitter town hall. He did one of those, and he took a little ribbing over it. But do you think the president is tech savvy, as they say, or nah?
I think he's pretty tech savvy. I think he knows his way around a computer quite well. He seems fairly comfortable. I mean, obviously he doesn't tweet. He can't in his position. He tweeted to himself at the beginning of the town hall and very cutely signed it, Bo. But yeah, I think he's pretty tech savvy. I think that he knows the value of this. I think he knows that something like this appeals to younger, tech savvy, type voters, potential voters, who of course they want to start going after, ready for 2012.
Right. So we might see more maybe Twitter town halls than you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised by that either. Bill Clinton was on the war path. What was his scoop with that? Something about the Republicans.
Oh, yeah. He was really on the war path today. He was speaking to Campus Progress's annual conference in Washington, which is liberal youth activists, and he went off. He was comparing Republican efforts to limit same-day voter registration and block convicted felons from voting to, let me just quote it. There has never been in my lifetime since we got rid of the poll tax and all the Jim Crow burdens on voting the determined effort to limit the franchise that we see today.
That says it all from him.
Yeah, and he said more. And then he talked about convicted felons, and he talked about Rick Scott in Florida's move to overturn past state precedent that allowed convicted felons to vote once they finished their probation periods. Why should we disenfranchise people forever once they've paid their price? Because most of them in Florida were African-Americans and Hispanics who tended to vote for Democrats. That's why.
Wow. I think you're going to hear more from Bill Clinton, too. I mean, if he's getting quoted and that's what happens, suddenly you'll see him pop into the picture. I wouldn't be surprised as we get closer to 2012, you start to see him poke around a little more.
Yeah, I think that's very likely. I mean, he was really passionate about this. He said, why is this going on? It's not rocket science. He says they're trying to make the 2012 electorate look like the 2010 electorate. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, he's really going after them on this.
All right, Victoria Jones, big meeting, as you said, on Thursday. We'll see if it's like we keep saying, we'll see if any news emerges from that. And swing us into the weekend there, of course. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News, as always, thanks. Victoria, of course, it's always about the dealings at the White House. That's why I say it's like a broken record. Constantly, it's a waiting game. But that's what happens in D.C. and Hollywood. In Hollywood, they're laying around in trailers. And when it comes to what's happening on the Hill, they're laying around in other spots outside and near our nation's capital. So this is a day before this U.S. budget meeting that we were talking about, and now we're almost at the dawn, the point of the White House ushering in Congress's leaders. And you got the highest-ranking senators, et cetera, the Republicans agreeing to include some significant revenue increases in a deficit reduction framework. Now that's what they're calling it. That's the official word. And so who is the highest ranking senator who says the Republicans are going to agree to some revenue bumps? That would be Senator John Kyle, because he's the number two guy in the Senate. And he talks about it. If you add everything up, the way he figures it, putting it to paper, it's about $200 billion or so. Kyle says the two ways that they're talking about to bring in revenue to the gov would be through the sale of government property. That makes sense, right? And also more fees for whatever the services are. So the things that you rely upon, those few little things you rely upon from the government, you're going to pay more. That's what that means. House of Representatives, the Majority Leader Eric Cantor, remember he flinched and then he blinked and then he went away actually for a short time. Also floated a possible tax compromise, saying that his side of the aisle could agree to closing some of those tax breaks in a budget deal only if there were other compromises as far as the tax cuts elsewhere. So it's the same deal. You cut the taxes, we'll agree to maybe closing some loopholes. We'll agree that we're going to go for some revenue, but you got to cut. So I want to hear about the cuts. What kind of cuts are we talking about? And pretty much the Democrats are saying, look, we're throwing out a menu. It's like the McDonald's Happy Meal menu of revenue increases. So not everyone's going to be happy, by the way. About $400 billion. We know what's the magic number, $14.3 trillion. And if you don't raise the debt ceiling, the Treasury, of course, Tim Geithner's lost like 30 pounds. And it wasn't through Jenny Craig. It's through sweating it out on this deficit ceiling thing where he, I believe, thought he was going to automatically get it. All right, coming up on America Tonight, the Casey Anthony trial, still just a day later, a lot of conversation about what happened and what the jury was thinking. And did the prosecution do its job? Was the defense that good? We're going to do that next, coming up here with Clint David. And then after that, we're going to pick the brain of a major Democratic strategist about just how close the Republicans are to toppling President Obama. You don't want to miss this stuff. Hang with us. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw of free enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states, "It's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel." Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
Normal blood pressure, naturally. How would that make you feel?
I'm Don from New Mexico. January of 2000, I had a heart attack. Then my real health began going downhill, and I had high blood pressure, high blood sugar, poor vision, and I really wasn't sleeping well. I was a mess, pretty much.
Don reports dramatic improvements with Heart and Body Extract.
I started taking Heart and Body Extract, and from within a few days, I started sleeping a lot better. My blood pressure normalized, my blood sugar normalized, and my sleep really did improve.
Experience these benefits and more when your body gets what it needs with the assistance of Heart and Body Extract. Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
And folks, I did not expect this at all. By the 7th, 8th, and 9th day, I saw dramatic improvements from taking Heart and Body Extract.
Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Plenty of reaction here on America Tonight to the Casey Anthony verdict, the fact that she was acquitted, and now it's just a matter of what happens with those charges she was convicted of as far as the police are concerned, and lying to law enforcement is the four that she was convicted of, although she could get a year for each of those. The thought is that probably with the time served, she just walks away from all of this. And a lot of people are reacting, more importantly, not to that, but to the acquittal. And what does that mean? What does it speak to when it comes to circumstantial evidence? Clint David has been on the show before. We think he's fabulous. He's a Dallas-based attorney. Always has an opinion on things legal and otherwise, too. But, Clint, thanks so much, as always, for coming on ATN.
Kate, it's great to be back with you. Appreciate it.
At your first initial reaction when you heard about the Casey Anthony verdict?
I'll be honest with you. I absolutely flipped out. I was in complete shock. I've only been practicing law for 31 years, so I guess I'm always willing to learn something new. But I just was sure, after a 33-day trial and deliberations under 11 hours, no notes were taken, the jury absolutely was going to come back, find her guilty of murder in the first degree. I thought that's what the evidence showed. Was absolutely certain that that's what they were going to find. When I heard the verdict, I just, my jaw dropped. I was absolutely shocked, like most of the planet.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. The prosecutor who tried this, a guy named Jeff Ashton, has been a lawyer for 30-some years, and I guess he's retiring. I've certainly dealt with a lot of attorneys and seen reactions in courtrooms, and you know this about verdicts of all kinds, but I don't know that I've ever seen anyone react that way. And people like, you know, people connected to the O.J. Simpson trial, like Marcia Clark, is saying she thinks that this was worse than the shock of the O.J. Simpson right. verdict from her point of view. And so now he decides to step away. What happened with the prosecution? Did everything kind of just fall apart for them, where they thought they had it shored up?
Well, I will tell you this. I mean, all the talking heads, everybody that you heard after final arguments by the prosecution were praising them. You know, strong, vibrant, great mm-hmm. job. The defense throwing up a bunch of smoke screens, throwing yeah. spaghetti against the wall, see what sticks. And now all of a sudden they're second-guessing everything. I believe they put on a strong case. Now, some are saying that maybe they overreached, that they went for the top rung of the ladder murder in the first degree. And they tried to convince that jury with the chloroform and the duct tape. And if the jury did not buy that, if the jury was not convinced of those things beyond a reasonable doubt, we can talk about that in a second because that's really important, then their whole case fell apart. Some say they reached too high, that they should have gone for an aggravated case or an aggravated manslaughter and tried to prove up a lesser included offense. But they didn't. They shot for the stars and they missed. And I mean, Kate, the jury poured them out on the street. I mean, they got slaughtered. This was not even a close verdict. When they came back that quickly, nobody was buying what that prosecutor was selling.
Yeah, no kidding. And now everybody's trying to find out what's going on with the jury. And the jury, sometimes you know this, they'll talk to the media. They look like they were going to do that, but then forget about it. They didn't do that initially because sometimes you can get a lot of jurors and figure out, well, what was it and what happened in that room when they, as they were sequestered and listening to everything and then, of course, coming up with a verdict that they came up with. I think that you're right. We said they just weren't buying what they were selling. Was that a smart move? I'm just curious. From the juror's perspective, not to say anything because they'll get bombarded since so many people in the court of public opinion are just beyond themselves upset over this verdict?
I think so. I think that when you're sequestered for over a month, I really think the fact they took no notes and look, there was a 20-page just the jury charge, how they could have gone through all the evidence, all the counts, the jury charge in such a limited period of time tells me they want it out of there. And after that verdict, they wanted to go home. They want to go back to their lives. They don't want to talk about this thing anymore. You know, if beyond a reasonable doubt, and I mentioned that a minute ago, it was so critical. Everybody hears that. That is a very high standard of proof. If you sue somebody in a civil court, it's called by preponderance of the evidence, meaning if you're the plaintiff, all it's got to be is a 51-49 tilt of the scales and you win. A criminal standard of proof, burdened by the prosecutor, is beyond a reasonable doubt, meaning if you as a juror have any doubt that's reasonable, you must acquit. If you're pretty sure she did it, you've got to acquit. If you're darn sure she did it, you've got to acquit. You must have absolutely no doubt in your mind that there is guilt. Otherwise, you are instructed to acquit. And they just – I still don't – I think they proved – all the elements beyond a reasonable doubt. It was circumstantial evidence, no smoking gun, no DNA, no connection of Casey Anthony to the body. The jury had to connect all of the dots. You know, the trunk smell, the parents' reaction. I mean, my goodness gracious, what else does the jury need to see? I mean, it's like, OJ, I guess you need a videotape.
Mm-hmm.
But this was tough. You know, Scott Peterson was circumstantial evidence.
Yeah.
They threw him away.
Yeah.
I don't think that jury wanted to believe, you got seven women, five men, that a young, attractive woman like this would kill her child. I just don't think they wanted to believe that.
Yeah. I had a caller that said that she's an attractive lady and she loved her child. You could tell from the photographs. And so perhaps that's exactly what you said. Perhaps that's what they were thinking. And that'd be pretty tough. How do you go beyond that? You know, they had 400 pieces of evidence. You just brought it up, the trunk, et cetera. And it was circumstantial. I love the analogy of the Scott Peterson case as he killed his wife, Lacey, and they threw the book at him.
Deal. They threw that boy away and locked him up and threw away the key.
Yeah, crazy. And what does this say about circumstantial cases? I mean, maybe other prosecutors, you know, they got to do their job, of course, and can't worry about other verdicts. But this was such a giant case. Maybe it gives pause to somebody who has any similarities to this.
I think it might give pause as to when you've got such a circumstantial evidence case, and that the one juror who, you know, the alternate, said, look, we didn't see a motive. There was no cause of death, no body. You know, we just didn't think it was proved. I think that what prosecutors might take away from this is, look, when we have a purely circumstantial evidence case, maybe we need to try to prove a lesser included offense, because if you shoot high and miss, your case collapses. This was a death case, and I just don't think this jury wanted to hear any of it. But how they returned so quickly tells me, Kate, they just – they all said, hey, what do you think? Nah, I don't think they proved it. Let's go home. I mean, it almost seems that simplistic to me. They should have said to really go through the evidence and the jury charge on each and every count. I think she, I mean, look, one man's personal opinion, I think she got away with murder. Let's
yep.
remember the jury didn't hear everything that we've heard, but
right.
I think the prosecution did the best they could with what they had. Maybe they overcharged. The defense, I thought, was somewhat of a joke.
Yep.
You know, all these theories of abuse, and they just absolutely tried to throw up every smokescreen they could. I think that the prosecution lost. I don't think the defense won.
Yeah, I agree with you. However, for other people who look at this, especially somebody in Orlando, they're in this situation, Jose Baez, he was the guy who was the defense, like you said, throwing up all kinds of things about the pool and she drowned and all this other stuff. He could still end up getting a boatload of clients, I think.
Oh, my goodness gracious. This is a kingmaker deal for him. I mean, this is the biggest thing since OJ. I mean, you know, they were having that champagne party, and one of the lawyers was jumping up and down for joy. And I just felt that was, you know, he says there's no winners. Well, it sure looked like there were winners when they were having their little champagne jamboree.
Yeah.
I found that to be unprofessional. You've got a dead daughter here. Look, the parents of Casey Anthony, wouldn't you or I, if our child just got acquitted and narrowly saved her skin, wouldn't we run up, embrace her? Oh,
yes.
My goodness, darling, your life is saved. By the way, let's now go find who killed our granddaughter,
right.
Your daughter.
Right.
They walked out. Everybody knows what happened here. This young woman is a classic sociopath, and she is going to have the life. Look, she's going to make a lot of money. She'll be in jail again. She can't run. She can't hide. It's like OJ. She's been convicted in the court of public opinion, just not in the courtroom.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow. And as you said, it should probably make a lot of money and then eventually end up in some other kind of circumstance, just like O.J. Simpson, who eventually got his comeuppance. And the sad thing is, Clint, you also said this, Kaylee, no justice for her, the beautiful 2-year-old girl.
No, and that's just so unbelievably tragic here that it worked. I've heard also that Casey said that the first thing that she wants to do is she'd like to have another baby, which the thought of that, yeah, is just chilling. Heard that on national television today. And, you know, maybe wants a do-over, be a mother again. Who knows? But she'll end up being a celebrity. I hope anyone listening doesn't give her a book deal, doesn't buy her whatever it is she's selling that people do not participate in. For someone to capitalize on this, I understand the parents are considering a book deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people will capitalize on this. The networks, everyone, and really what you have is a dead, gorgeous little 2-year-old girl, innocent victim. It's just tragic all the way around. It makes me sick.
I agree with you. What a way to end
again.
This.
No kidding. Thing. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning. Eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, are indefinitely reusable, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793, 877-747-2793. Call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids, the original since 1976.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Is your church, school, or organization desperately looking for new fundraising ideas? Tired of the same old candles or candy, taking orders, inventory, and low profits? Well, here's great news. 10X Fundraising guarantees 10 times traditional profits with zero hassle. For an amazing free bonus, free shipping, and an extra 10% off, enter GCN when you go to 10xfundraising.com. That's the number 10, the letter X, fundraising.com. Or call 800-480-8797. Visit 10X Fundraising for 10 times the profit today.
Will you survive during the economic collapse or another deadly natural disaster? Your key to survival lies here at HardChute.com. A former member of U.S. Special Operations knows what you'll need to survive in these hard times. Our online store arms you with extreme survival kits, self-heating food reserves, and more. For a limited time, with any purchase, you'll also receive a 3-day survival kit absolutely free. Prepare now. The online store, www.hardchute.com. www.hardchute.com.
Big Berkey water filters are in high demand. Storable foods are also in high demand. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has always kept our focus on the Berkey water filter products. But increasingly, our customers have been asking for storable foods. After months of research, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com now offers great-tasting, long-lasting, storable foods. These ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches. All you do is just add water. And because they're sealed so well, they come with a 25-year shelf life. Combine our Berkey water filters, which are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water with our storable foods, and you have a winning combination. Remember, we offer free shipping on every order over $50, and GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY today.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver, that's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338, utopiasilver.com, taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
Whoa, you know, you know, you know, you know, you must have been a beautiful baby. You must have been a beautiful child. When you were only
welcome back to America Tonight. We've had him on several times. Always a delight to welcome David Morey back on the show with us. I mean, he is the strategic guru. Let's just call him that. Because if we did his resume, it would take up all four, actually, hours of this show. I'll give you just a little bit. He's the vice chairman of Core Strategic Group. He's the founder and CEO of DMG. He has been an advisor in just politics in general to a lot of different people, certainly with the Democrats. You could look at Russian President Boris Yeltsin. I just found out that recently. Even Mexican President Vicente Fox. I bet there were some interesting conversations. And here he is on America Tonight. Hey, David, how are you?
Kate, it's great to be with you.
All right, I got to ask you this question before we dive into a bunch of other stuff that relating to politics in America. But what was Boris Yeltsin like? What was he like to deal with?
Well, he was complicated. He had his own personal habits that made it all interesting. And we helped he and his entire delegation come into town and, create a stronger relationship with the United States, which at the time was very critical. We also gave some advice in there. Early democratization, you know, even Russia moving from communism to democracy, you know, some of the strategies we've learned from great people smarter than us, you know, applied in those situations. So it was a fascinating cultural experience, and he was a piece of work, I'll tell you. But he was courageous. I mean, he, you know, got up on that tank at a key moment in history, right?
Yeah. Since you were there in the beginning, how far do you think Russia has come now at this point, all these many years later?
Well, I mean, in some ways it's come further than anybody could have anticipated, and in some ways it has remarkable challenges ahead. I think the gap between the rich and the poor is wider in Russia than, in third world countries. So it's got that sort of strange sort of, you know, kind of mafiosa type culture. Yet on the other hand, it has democratic values, and it's starting to get closer and closer to real democracy. It's as messy as real democracy in the way that we all know it here in America.
Yeah, speaking of messy, what's getting interesting, I think, with the Republicans, we'll start there, is I don't know how to describe it. It's sort of like everybody's throwing in. There's game pieces, and different pieces are starting to move around the board. Michelle Bachmann scores some big points, not just with the Tea Party, but with some others in New Hampshire, and certainly some of the other things that she's had to say and do, and she brings in a heavy hitter campaign-wise with Rollins helping her out. How far do you give? Because a lot of people have asked me this question on the air, and you know this because that's what you do. You're about strategy. Is she doing the right thing, and do you give her a chance to be there in the end?
Yeah, I wouldn't underestimate her. It's hard to imagine Michelle Bachmann becoming the nominee. And Ed is very, very smart. He hasn't won lately, but he's really smart, and he's a good strategist. And he did a good job with Ronald Reagan, for sure. I mean, so I think I'm impressed with how well she's prepared herself. You know, she's done all the things that you need to do. And she's, you know, the problem I think people have is that we have a saying in one of our chapters of our book, The Underdog Advantage, called Everything Communicates. When you start really messing up some fundamentals of history, and she shares that with Sarah Palin, you know, it just sort of discredits the whole argument a little bit. But I'm not sure for the base, and particularly the Tea Party activists, it's a two-party system, the Republican Party, right? I mean, she really excites these people and gets them really moving. So it's starting to look, I mean, you know, it's a little early to say this, like it's a two-person race, Romney versus Bachmann. And unless Rick Perry comes in and shakes it up and something happens, it's hard for me to imagine Romney doesn't win the nomination right now. You know, although it's a long road to Tipperary, right? We're a long way away from primaries. But Romney has a pretty formidable lead, and it looks like it'll come down to a two-person race, you know, coming out of New Hampshire, going into some of the southern states.
Yeah. And then if Romney does get it and you're there and you have to figure out, I call it the undercard, you have to figure out who's going to be the VP on that ticket. What would you look for?
Well, Romney, you know, it's interesting. I mean, he can't choose Huntsman, right? I mean, because that would be religiously incorrect and unbalanced. You know, Pawlenty, you know, we all thought until he sort of it's funny how politics works today. He gives one bad answer and he's out of the race. I mean, you know, in a debate that nobody watched, by the way. I mean, it's amazing how this stuff has to come out just perfectly in the starting gate. It's like trying to win the Triple Crown here. You can't have one false step in these presidential campaigns, which, by the way, Romney is, as Bill Clinton said this week, he's a much better candidate than he was 4 years ago. You know, he's got a much better answer to the health care question that he'll be dogged, you know, throughout the campaign. So, I mean, I think that, you know, it's going to be, if you had to bet on a Romney running mate, you know, Michelle Bachmann wouldn't be out of the question. I mean, that would sort of, you know, be interesting, I think.
Sure. Sure.
You know, I mean, Marco Rubio, I think, would be ideal, you know, because it would bring Florida into play. But he said about 8,000 different ways, I don't want to be vice presidential nominee. On the other hand, you know, people always say that, you know, especially when they're running themselves, and then things change when it all happens. And I had a dinner last week with President Obama and then went out to a smaller fundraising with those folks. And I just wouldn't, discount Romney's ability to beat the president. I mean, I think depending on the economic reality, I don't think this is anything close to a shoo-in. I think, you know, the American people are really hurting. I think the White House and the campaign team behind President Obama know that. But it's not a cakewalk, it seems to me. I mean, you know, there are challenges. And on the one hand, the president is, you know, one of the great thoroughbred politicians that I've ever worked with and seen. On the other hand, you know, he has some challenges in terms of the economy and the sense that, you know, he's distanced himself from the American people. He's not connected up emotionally with the American people. And, you know, they're going to be pounding him on health care. They're going to be pounding him on the deficit issue. And if the deficit, the debt talks crash, you know, it's not clear that one party versus another will be blamed. It's likely that both parties will be blamed. And I don't know that that helps the president, you know, given his ultimate leadership responsibility. So I think there are big challenges here. I would not go to sleep leading into this next November election. I think it could be closer than people believe.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, you meet with the president, you talk to people around him, you go to the fundraiser, and do you emphasize that? I mean, you're there and you're the strategic arm, and you got to make sure that the people in the room realize this isn't a layup. Is that part of what your message would be?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, on the one hand, the president has the advantage of not having to campaign and, you know, raising $1 billion, perhaps. But on the other hand, you know, it's that Mario Cuomo quote, you know, campaigning is poetry, governing is prose. You know, he's into the prose phase here. You know, there's nothing that signifies prose more than having to sit down with Mitch McConnell, right, and negotiate a budget deal, you know, or with John Bonner. So, I mean, I think, you know, he's necessarily going to look like he's mucked up in a dysfunctional political system. You know, most Americans believe what's obviously true. We're having a hard time solving our own problems with our political system. You know, the political will, you know, the president said something very interesting, you know, last week at this event. He said, you know, we can all pull out our napkins, everyone from every party and all the leadership, and we all have the same mathematics. They all have the same arithmetic, but they don't have the same political will. So, you know, what's really happening here is the political will isn't lining up the way it should in terms of getting problems solved. And that is distressing, as it should be for the American people. You know, we're trying to solve our own problems and balance our own checkbooks, and we would ask the same of our leaders.
Yeah, absolutely. The president did something that we've already talked about here in America Tonight. He did the first Twitter town hall. Smart move, right, to try to rally those younger people, because they're on Twitter. That's the communication device. That's where people are looking, social media. This was probably a smooth move, or what do you think?
100%. Very smart. I mean, I think you know, I was watching some of the commentary and some of the, you know, Twitter advocates. You know, I'm a light Twitter user, but some of the people that live and breathe on Twitter wanted more interaction, you know, so, okay, maybe they do that next round. I mean, it shows, I don't know if you watched it, but he is really, really formidable, you know, in those kinds of venues. And it does, you know, it does remind us how great a candidate he is, how strong a communicator is, even though he, you know, he doesn't connect up as much as perhaps he'd like to with the American people. It's a challenge for him. I think he's so smart. You know, he's got so much information. You know, I think that the campaign will find him more and more connecting up emotionally to the American people, because he'll have to do that to win the election. You know, we want our presidents to sort of connect up, to relate to us emotionally. That, I think, you'll see more and more. It's hard to do that with the Twitter, you know, town hall format that they organized. It was much more about intellectual answers to tough questions. But still, I thought it was extremely effective, and you know, he's got a lot of youth behind him right now.
Yeah, no kidding. We only have a minute left, and this is kind of a big one for you, but I'll just throw it out there. A lot of people talk about the third party. I've even thought about that before. There's people that are disillusioned. Think we'll ever have that third party? Well, you and I are alive anyway.
I do. You know, there's never been a greater desire for it, you know, because there's greater dissatisfaction of both parties than at any point in modern history. And so, you know, I think there's an opening there, but no one's jumped into it. Mike Bloomberg, I think, could have. You know, Ross Perot, who was crazy, got 19% of the vote. So can you imagine if someone is sane and they run as a third-party candidate with a lot of their own money? That could be interesting.
Yeah, that could be interesting. And that's why I think if we continue to go down that path, and like you're saying, the political will, it kind of opens up that lane that just maybe something happens there. You never know. All right, the book is called The Underdog Advantage. David Morey, always great to have you on America Tonight. It's fun to pick your brain, and hopefully we'll do that again down the road as we get closer to, you know, shoring up what happens with the Republicans and seeing where the president is, and continued success with your magic, my friend.
To save, then you're ready for the Super Summer Sale at Herbal Healer Academy. Herbal Healer has been the leader in quality natural supplements for 23 years. Log on to herbalhealer.com and take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on 500 parts per million colloidal silver. the best pharmaceutical grade available, and all sizes on sale. Super Male Plex with you Hindi, and Super Femplex for summer toning. Buy glucosamine chondroitin 60 caps, summer sale priced at only $12. Colon and Answer 250 caps, summer sale priced at just $18. And if your brain's a little foggy, we have a great supplement on sale called Memory Power. Log on and hit the postcard specials link for more super summer savings at herbalhealer.com. As always, new customers get a free catalog with first order. Herbal Healer Academy, healing the world with nature one person at a time.
You've heard great things about Berkey. You've been thinking of getting a Berkey water purification system, but for some reason, you haven't made your purchase just yet. Okay, here's one more reason to buy the best water purification system you can buy now. The Berkey guy at GoBerkey.com is giving away free Pelican flashlights. Yes, with every purchase of any Berkey water purification system from the Berkey guy at GoBerkey.com, you'll receive a free Pelican 2360 LED flashlight, a $39 value. But it won't last long, only now through July 15th. Hurry, call 877-886-3653, 877-886-3653, or shop online at GoBerkey.com. That's Go, BERKEY.com. No coupon code necessary. A free Pelican flashlight is yours with every purchase of any Berkey water purification system only at GoBerkey.com or by calling 877-886-3653. Hurry, offer ends July 15th.
Will I have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boosts resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali-C.
In 1965, this is the sound. Come in, John. One more time. Crazy tree. And a drag. Papa's got a brand new bag.
As we race to the finish line here on this Hour of America tonight with me, Kate Delaney. Let's give you a little odds and ends. One, it's about the numbers, and sadly, New Zealand hit with a quake. We're talking about some islands, a little bit different, but when you say the number 7.8 on the Richter scale, never, ever good. Of course, any number, when you say 5.6, if you were in Manhattan, that could be disastrous. But 7.8 in a New Zealand island in the Pacific, they're saying it triggered a small tsunami that had actually New Zealand bracing for some gigantic waves. And since all of us are weary of that kind of thing, thanks to what's happened in Japan back in March, the good news is that ultimately they canceled the tsunami warning and damage not that extensive from everything that I've heard so far at this point. Still pretty scary whenever you hear it. Just telling people to stay off the beaches and stay out of water until they were sure that the tsunami danger had passed. Boy, 7.8. It's a very, very remote island, a volcanic island, in fact. So not a lot of people living there, but people who certainly visit and people who were staying on the island. So to be safe, natural, you have to issue that kind of a warning. Now, this wasn't about warnings. This was about flat-out fraud. Don't know if you heard the story or not, but here's a shocker for you. You never know what goes on inside the minds of the PTA moms, right? And I actually, somebody sent me a note about it, and I thought it was a joke. It was like, knock, knock, who's there? PTA moms asking for money. And what it turns out is that there were three of these moms in Pennsylvania who use connections with an elementary school to recruit investors to jump on a phony $14 million get-rich scheme. Everybody realizes that, right? If there's a way to get rich or thin quickly, take this pill, oh, just sign up here, wouldn't we all be doing that? But what the Sheriff's Department is saying, and they broke this open last week, they're saying that the scam lasted 2 years. And for 2 years, nobody said anything, but they had an investor who complained finally. So you have two of the women who were arrested on 22 felony charges. I mean, this is serious stuff because the amount of money, grand theft, security fraud. You already got one of the women who's in jail now on grand theft charges related to some other kind of a swindle. But they had it going on. They were working it. What they did was they told investors, and this does sound good, right? They told investors they had the exclusive right to sell all the dairy stuff at Disneyland, and they just needed money to expand, that they were there. And if you jumped on, I mean, they had the right. So Disneyland doesn't get any bigger than that. But, of course, they didn't have any such thing. They didn't have the rights to anything dairy. Only in their wild imaginations. So it was an elaborate Ponzi scheme, and they actually made hundreds and thousands of dollars. Millions in the end. What did I say? $14 million. So enough people were willing to buy into this. Oh, PTA, you know, they're doing the dairy thing. It sounded good. And that's the problem. No red flags went up until somebody got cranky because they weren't getting the returns they thought they were going to get. And that blew the whole thing flat out wide open. I guarantee there are people that were floored by that, absolutely floored. All right, since we're doing the odds and ends, I've often wondered this. I don't know how many of you, because we're coming off of a holiday weekend, have ever had the pleasure of going to Yellowstone Park. You know, think of being in the bowels, I call it the bowels of some of these incredible parks we have in this country. Some of you listening to me right now live on the outskirts of some of these incredible areas. I mean, I don't think there's enough time, honestly, in anyone's life to see all the treasures we have here in the United States, unless you're incredibly wealthy and all you do is travel from place to place. Regardless, one place you want to put on your bucket list, Yellowstone. Amazing place. So a grizzly bear, which there could be grizzly bears there, and there have been attacks in the past. Sadly, a grizzly bear killed a guy who was hiking with his wife in Yellowstone. They were backpacking, and they surprised the female bear and cubs, and that's always the bad deal there. If you've got a mama and the cubs, what do? They say you're supposed to stand still, kind of hide and blend into the area you are. But if you flat out come upon them, I don't see how you can do that. And a grizzly can move pretty fast. It was the park's first time that this has happened, and a mauling that resulted in a death since the mid-80s. But the strange thing is, it's the third in just over a year. Now you got these tourists roaming around, and you have a growing number of these bears. And that's not a good thing. Why are the bears suddenly coming out more? What happened was when the guy was attacked, by the way, what do? The wife jumped on the phone, cell phone, hit 911. Other hikers could hear screams and whatnot, and they tried to help, but it was much too late. Once people started to show up, that was it. And the couple actually saw the bear twice on their hike. The first time, and this was the mistake, the first time they saw the bear, they just kept hiking. Oh, it's okay, you know, we're all right. They kept hiking. The second time, too late, the grizzly was flat out on a run toward them. And the man, what could he do? Told his wife to run. So the good thing here is, and there's nothing really good about it, so that's probably the wrong way to phrase this, but if you're looking for any kind of a silver lining, thank God the woman really didn't see the bear attack her husband. Because she dropped to the ground, and the grizzly lifted her off the ground by the day pack that she had, then just dropped her. But the man jumped right head on into the path, realizing what was going to happen afterwards. So, you know, grizzlies in the Yellowstone area have, as I said, suddenly been a bigger problem for people, raiding bird feeders and what is that? That's nothing. But looking for food is what I'm assuming, and they're just getting closer. So they're trying to figure out, is it that? Is it that change in the makeup of the land and the food and all that sort of stuff? And, you know, I'm thinking, how many grizzlies do you think in the size of Yellowstone, how many grizzlies do you think there are out there? And the park people believe there's like 600 or so. And the tourists, of course, want to see the grizzly if they can from a safe distance, but is there really ever a safe distance? And Yellowstone is so popular, like I said, on lots of people's bucket lists. 3.6 million went to Yellowstone last year, and that shot up 10%. And each year they see that number climb, no matter what the economy is. So I guess if you're going to backpack, and how do you stay safe? I mean, you stay on the designated trails, but if the grizzlies are going to go there, that doesn't really help. Maybe bigger groups, just kind of keep an alert. And if, for goodness sake, if you see a bear, why wouldn't you just turn around? I wouldn't even risk that. And they actually have this spray you can use, some kind of bear spray. And it's supposed to be pretty effective in stopping them. Because that would be my question. How often do we say, are you emergency prepared on this show? Because we're always talking about Mother Nature. But what about when you, okay, so you know you're going camping, you feel competent in your skills, but there's no way. You and the grizzly, what are you going to do? You got to drop, baby. Even COP sent us a little thing here. To go to the website, americatonight.net, you'll see me waving. And through the miracle of Pal Talk, COP is chatting with us. He says the best way to deal, this is a Jersey guy too, he says the best way to deal with a bear is to drop to the ground and play dead. Don't move. The bear will sit on you, smell your breath, get up, walk away, sit there for a while and leave. And that's right, COP. That's the same thing that I've heard too. But it's just like what they say with sharks, be very, very still. It's so easy to say. But when you have a great white coming after you, you have a grizzly tearing down on top of you, do you think you're going to do that statue thing where you just freeze in the moment? We're putting it out there, though, because it's a sad story that this couple was hiking, and, of course, the man was killed trying to save his wife, and now you know that there's so many grizzlies, not just in Yellowstone, but in some of those other parks as well. Any thoughts on the show? You know what to do. Send them to me through the website, americatonight.net. Click on the email, and you're in.